So thanks everyone for coming along. So I'm in University of Queensland, this consortium of universities called the Centre for Engineered Quantum Systems. And the work I'm going to be talking about today is with my student Andrew Bolt and David Poulin and Guillaume Duclos Cianci, who I guess people here know. And what I'm going to be talking about is this idea that we came up with and been working on for the last few years, foliating quantum codes. But to begin with, and really to motivate the reason that we started thinking about this, I want to give a primer on the toric code. But actually, before I do that, who here already knows the toric code? Well, okay, so a few people do, and a few people don't. But okay, this is relatively quick to talk about. So the toric code is a code defined over, it's a quantum error correcting code that's defined over a collection of qubits, which are physical qubits, which I've indicated as little green arrows. And it lives on a lattice with these qubits sitting on edges of the lattice. I'll probably use the phrase toric code and surface code and planar code interchangeably as I go through. The only difference really is a statement about the boundary conditions. The essential ideas are the same in all cases. But as for any quantum error correcting code, the important things to define are the stabilizers. So the stabilizers for the toric code are these ones that are centered each on a vertex, which correspond to products of four X operators around the physical qubits adjacent to a given vertex. And they're called star operators for obvious reasons. And the other are the plaquette operators, which correspond to products of four Z, Pauli Zs around the qubits on a plaquette. And as is required for any stabilizer code, all the stabilizers commute with each other. That's what defines them. And the valid code space is the one for which is a plus one eigenstate of all the stabilizers. So hopefully people here are familiar with codes, and so this is just fits into that well understood definition of codes. In the case of the toric code, there's a very nice geometric arrangement of things, and that's important when one thinks about the logical operators for the toric code. So the logical operators necessarily commute with these stabilizers. And in the toric code case, the logical operators are string-like or extensive operators that span the entire lattice. So in the case of the toric code, there's in fact two classes of logical operators. There's two qubits hidden in the toric code. Here's one example of the logical operators associated with one of the qubits. It's a string of Zs and a string of Xs that span the lattice orthogonal to one another. And these are logical operators. So the logical Z operator commutes with all of the plaquette operators, sort of trivially, because they're products of Zs, as is the logical Z operator. It also commutes with all the all the vertex operators, slightly less trivially, but simply because logical Z operators intersect star operators, vertex operators, an even number of times. So there's two collisions between this logical operator, which is a string of Zs, and this stabilizer, which is a product of Xs around this vertex. Two Zs and two Xs commute with one another. And the logical X operator is very similar. It's a product of Xs that spans the lattice in the other direction. And in this case, it commutes with all the star operators trivially. The string of Xs and this product of Xs commutes. But it also commutes slightly less trivially with plaquette operators, which are products of Z operators around a plaquette. So that defines the plaquette operator, the stabilizers, plaquettes and stars, as well as the logical operators for their toric code. Do I have another slide? There we go. Okay. So the reason I got interested in this in the first place was really thinking about a problem of, this is a few years ago now, of what happens in codes generally, but specifically in the surface code, when you start losing qubits. So the surface code is an error correcting code, which means firstly that it's able to detect errors. And errors are detected on the surface code by the stabilizers, as they are in any code. In particular, a chain of errors, so if there was an X error on, say, this site here, that would manifest itself in the sign of this plaquette operator and this plaquette operator being flipped. And if there's a chain of errors, for instance, this site and this site suffering X errors, then the two plaquettes at the ends of that chain, this one and this one, would have experienced a minus one phase. So when measuring the stabilizers, one detects properties of the error chain that happened, and then there's the possibility to take a corrective action. And so what we're interested in, so the toric code is a code that has some very nice properties. And what we're interested in was asking the question, what happens if another class of errors occurs, which is where some of these qubits get deleted? So that gets either called losses or leakage. And the observation that we made was that if some of these qubits, say this guy here, is lost, firstly, there's a problem. And the problem is that, for example, a plaquette operator like this one is unable to be measured. So it's not possible to detect errors using the plaquette operators, simply because if a qubit's lost, there are some plaquettes that are affected, and then it's not possible to measure them. But there's a great deal of redundancy in the surface code. And in this case, you can see this plaquette operator multiplied by this plaquette operator has a z squared. That's the identity of that site. And so the product of two plaquette operators that coincide at a given site is independent of the state of that qubit. So we were able to define these new objects, super plaquettes and analogously super star operators, which are the products of these two plaquettes, elementary plaquettes. And the product is, in the stabilizer group, is just the product of now six z's around this super plaquette, this combination of the two plaquettes. It's independent of this qubit, and so one can still detect error chains that terminate on the boundary of this object by doing a slightly more complicated six-body measurement as opposed to the four-body measurement associated with these elementary plaquettes. Another thing to say is that logical operators, which are strings of Pauli z's, in this case Pauli for the logical z operator, strings of Pauli z's that propagate across the lattice, can be deformed to avoid sites that are lost simply by multiplying by plaquettes in the stabilizer generators. And you can see here, if I multiply this string of z's by this plaquette operator, I again get a z squared at that site, and I have a string of z's that walks around this lost site. So it's in principle possible to make logical measurements on this lattice, even if some of the qubits are lost. Important thing about losses in this case are that they're located. We know where they are, and so we can take measures to measure quantities that are independent of those guys. Right, and so this opening part of my talk is really an abbreviation of a much longer talk. But the end result of this analysis, where we take account of losses by forming super plaquettes and deformed logical operators, is the following numerical result, which is a study of the performance of error correction threshold of a code versus the loss rate. So in this case, we're thinking about the surface code where in one round we delete some qubits with some probability. We apply Pauli errors across the code with some other rate. And we ask the question, for a given loss rate, what is the threshold, the error correction threshold that's achievable by measuring the remaining super plaquettes and super star operators, and asking what threshold are we able to recover from those Pauli computational errors. So there's two points on this curve that were already known. So up this end, we've got zero losses. So this is the original surface code. And I guess early on, after it was proposed, Jim Harrington and others did simulations of the performance of the toric code. And they found an error threshold of about just over 10% for a particular error model. And so this point here just corresponds to the lossless surface code. This point over here corresponds to another regime in which there's no computational errors. And what happens in this regime is very easy to understand. If I take this lattice and I delete physical qubits with a rate of 50% or greater, then it's known from percolation theory that that there will be a region of losses in this lattice which spans the entire lattice. That is, losses percolate the lattice. And so, So at this end here, if the loss rate is 50% or greater, it becomes impossible to even measure logical operators any longer. There's no logical operator that propagates across the entire lattice without colliding somewhere necessarily with a loss qubit. And so this point here is really just the percolation threshold. It's also known that for an independent loss model, one can't exceed this point because of the no cloning theorem, and the argument goes as follows. So imagine I've got a surface code, and I at random select half the qubits, and I'm going to call them the A set, and I'm going to select the remaining half to call the B set. If I could correct both of those sets reliably, then I would have replicated a single quantum state that was encoded in the original family into two copies of the same state in these two families. And so we know from the no cloning theorem that that's not possible. And so this point not only corresponds to percolation, but really also to this much this other quantum limit set by the no cloning theorem. So that point and that point we already understand. It's these points in the middle that we contributed, which essentially shows that there's this very graceful trade-off between computational errors on this axis and loss errors on this axis. So that was a few years ago, and it was in many ways a warm-up to this much more sophisticated model that Robert Rausendorf proposed some years ago, in which rather than thinking about a surface code, he thought about this three-dimensional lattice, cluster state lattice, which of qubits, which are in a special correlated state known as a cluster state, and he was able to show in that scenario that one can achieve fault tolerant quantum computation simply by building this large three dimensional cluster state and measuring qubits in a specific set of bases that might change as you go along in the calculation, but it's really just measurement based computation on this 3D 3D lattice. The same sort of tricks work in that case. One can deform sort of the analog, higher dimensional analog of the logical operators. So in the surface code, logical operators are these one-dimensional objects. In this proposal, the analog of those things are really these two-dimensional sheets at one higher dimension. And it becomes it's possible to deform these sheets in precisely the same way as we did deform the logical operators in the toric code. Really, the observation in this case is that the errors in Rausendorf's scheme are detected by these parity check operators, which are products of X operators on the faces of cubes, as opposed to in the toric code on the at the endpoints of these vertex operators. So what Rausendorf really did was to generalize the surface code into this three-dimensional extension of itself. It turns out that there's, and that's really going to be the subject of the next part of my talk, but just sort of for completeness, really, we studied a few years ago now the performance of Rausendorf's scheme when we include the possibility that some of these qubits are lost. And though the scheme is very much more sophisticated than what one can do in the surface code, it still remains the case that the endpoints are determined by the fault tolerance properties of the underlying construction. And Rausendorf showed in a few years ago that there was a fault tolerant quantum computational threshold of about half to 1% for his scheme. Turns out that in three dimensions, the percolation threshold is about a quarter. It's 24.9, in fact. So just as in the surface code, these two endpoints are determined by the percolation threshold for the relevant lattice and Rausendorf's construction of the original code. And there's again a graceful trade-off when one accounts for loss. So including losses here, there's some region which is correctable and some region which is uncorrectable. Okay, so that's sort of really just covering old work, which we did. And it set the scene really to start thinking about what makes Rausendorf's scheme special. And the answer really is that what Rausendorf did was to take, one way to think about it at least, is to take the surface code. Yes.
Sorry, what was the difference between the blue and the red points in the previous, and the y-axis?
Oh, okay, so this computational threshold depends not just on the details of the error model, but also on the implementation. And so the implementation of the decoder that Rausendorf used didn't exploit some certain tricks which you can exploit. And so when we realize that, you know, you can do something slightly better than his. But you know, morally, these are actually the same value. So there are other tricks that people have exploited, which has pushed this number up to about 0.7% or thereabouts. So what did Rausendorf do in this three-dimensional cluster? Well, that's what I'm going to sort of walk through over the next few slides, but interleave with talking about some other codes. So the surface code can be really thought of as, in one sense, and the sense that's relevant for Rausendorf, it can be thought of as a code that is derived from a cluster state. So I talked about cluster states at the start. Who here knows what a cluster state is? Okay, most people. So a cluster state is a state defined over a collection of qubits. And here I've indicated qubits either as circles or squares. And one way to prepare such a state would be to initialize each of these qubits in a plus x eigenstate and then impose a control phase gate along each of these black lines. Okay. there are other definitions of a cluster state which are equivalent. But for our purposes, I wanted to think about a cluster state that's relevant to the surface code. So here's a cluster state, and as I'll show to you, when we measure out these red qubits, these are ancilla, in the X spaces, what we're left with is a surface code. Right. Okay, so there's another definition of cluster states, which is in terms of stabilizer operators. And the rule for writing down a stabilizer operator for a given cluster state is to focus on a specific qubit. Let's look at this guy here. Put an X operator there and put Z operators on all its neighbors. So here's one of the cluster stabilizers, X, Z, Z, Z. Here's another one. Let's focus on this guy. And I put an X operator here and Z on its neighbors. Now, it turns out that if I form the product let me go back one step. If I look at this cluster stabilizer that's centered on this ancilla, you can see that it already is reminiscent of the surface code stabilizers. In particular, if I were to measure this ancilla in the X basis, the remaining qubits are now going to be stabilized by the product Z, Z, Z. And for those who are sort of experts, I'm going to assume that I get a plus one outcome for this X measurement. If I got a minus one, I could fix that by certain transformations. But let's assume that every time I measure X, I get plus one, just to make the argument simple. What would be left over is a state which is stabilized by Z, Z, Z. So that looks like the Plaquette operator of the surface code. So we've already got, just from the cluster state stabilizers, half of half of the stabilizers for the surface code, namely the Plaquette operators. Now let's look at the other family of cluster stabilizers for this particular cluster state, namely the ones that are centered on the code qubits, these blue circles. So I've got an X operator here, ZZ is one of the cluster stabilizers. There's another one by the way, can you see this laser pointer when I'm shining it? So there's another cluster stabilizer centered on qubit 4, which is XZZ. There's another one centered on qubit 7, and another one centered on qubit 9. So the product of these four cluster stabilizers is x, 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 and then products of z squareds on these ancilla. Z squared is the identity, and so what you're left over with is just the product x, x, x. Well, that's just the vertex operators of the surface code. So after this sequence of measurements, it's clear that is the sequence of x measurements on these ancilla, one has projected out Plaquette operators on these qubits and vertex operators on these qubits, and that's translationally true across the lattice. So this cluster state is a thing which, when measured, when the ancilla are measured in the X basis, produces a surface code encoded in a particular logical eigenstate. That's true of other codes here. So here's the Steen code represented as a graph state. Again, these are ancilla, the red qubits. The blue qubits are code qubits. The Steen code is a 7-qubit code. And if I measure these red marked ancilla in the X basis, then I project out the Steen code stabilizers, that is Z, Z, Z. Likewise, I project out Z, Z, Z on these four, and also Z there. Now, this clicker's not to flash. Right, there we go. So there's an example of one of the cluster stabilizers centered on this site. The Z's on its neighbors, measuring the X basis, projects these onto the Z eigenstates. The more subtle stabilizers to worry about are the X, the cluster stabilizers centered on these code qubits. So if I look at this cluster stabilizer centered here, X, Z, Z, multiply it by a cluster stabilizer centered here, X, Z, Z, another one centered here, which is XZ, and another which is centered here, XZZ. Then what you can see is I'm left with a cluster stabilizer, a new stabilizer, which is XXXX times identity, identity, and identity. So what I'm left over with after measuring these ancilla in the X basis, again, is the Z-like stabilizer of the Steen code, as well as the X-like stabilizer of the Steen code, XXX. So again, this cluster state is a progenitor cluster. It produces a Steen code when measured in a certain way. So here's the last example I wanted to show you, which is the Shor code. Shor code is, here's the Shor code cluster state. It's even simpler in many ways than the Steen code. If I measure out the ancilla in the X basis, I'm left with a state that's stabilized by Z1 and Z2. Also by Z5 and Z6 and so on. And if you go through the analysis, you find out that it's stabilized by all the Shor code stabilizers. So here's the codes that people are familiar with: surface code, Shor code, Steen code, represented as cluster states from which the valid code states can be derived by X single qubit X measurements. So why is that interesting? Well, by itself, it's just a cute observation which other people have made. Rausendorf's construction can be thought of as what we call a foliation of the surface code. So what does that mean? So this is a sort of complicated cluster state. It's complicated just because it's in 3D, and I've tried to show you on 2D. But all I've done is taken three copies of the Rausendorf code, a cluster state that produces the surface code, sorry. This is one copy here, here's another copy here, and here's another copy in the middle, which is just twisted by 90 degrees. So really this is just a dual code to the two end codes. And what I've done is to take this cluster state stabilizer three times, stack them together and build a new cluster state by inducing control phase gates between code qubits in alternating sheets. So here's now three-dimensional cluster state, this three-dimensional lattice, and it turns out that this is precisely the same lattice as Rausendorf thought about in his fault-tolerant quantum computation. This is, in fact, the way he conceived of building his lattice. The observation I want to make here is that, again, to repeat myself, the Rausendorf lattice is really just a foliation, stacking together of the surface code. And by stacking together, I really mean taking copies of the surface code and inducing control phase gates between the code and its dual. And the unit cell of this three-dimensional cluster is this guy here. So blue qubits on this plane, blue, 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 and blue, correspond in this case to these blue qubits here. The end faces of this unit cell I've drawn correspond to the red ancilla here and here. But between these four and these two, I'd get this unit cell. And the important point about that is that the parity check operators of the Rausendorf cluster is made up of products of X's around the faces of this unit cell. And in this picture, it just corresponds to X, 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 X. And that's, as in the case of the vertex operators for the surface code, that's really just a product of some of the cluster stabilizers that live in this cluster lattice. So the question that we wanted to think about, let me back up for one moment. So what can you do with this three-dimensional cluster state? Well, the first thing that was discussed as an application was long-range entanglement sharing. And so what's the point there? Well, if you build this lattice, you can imagine these green cluster bonds correspond to some long-range length, maybe some distance separated by optic fiber. And so that these interior surface codes might correspond to some nodes, node 1, node 2, and node 3, separated by some distance. And if you could build over that distance this three-dimensional cluster state, and then measure the qubits at each node, measure these qubits internally and these ancilla qubits at each end face, what you effectively do is to project out the two end face surface codes into a Bell pair, an entangled state of the toric code at this end, or surface code at this end, and the surface code at this end. Now you can see that in a similar way to the analysis we did earlier, thinking about cluster states with ancilla measurements. So it takes a little bit of squinting here, but so let me look at this surface code. Well, a logical Z operator for that is logical Z operator for that is Z, Z, Z. So, and the reason for that is that in the surface code, the blue qubits here, here, and here would form a vertex operator. Logical Z operator on the surface code here. Here's a logical Z operator on the surface code here. If I measure out these qubits in the X basis, what do? Well, I get X, Z, Z, and X, Z, Z, and X, Z, Z. And I also get even products of Z on these ancilla in the interior. And so this global state is stabilized by Z, 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 Z. Okay. So when you go through the algebra, you see that this state is stabilized by logical Z on this face, logical Z on that face. Also, after X measurements on the interior, you find out that it's also stabilized by the logical operators X, 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 and X, X, X as a product. So this cluster, after measurements of the bulk and the end face ancilla, is stabilized by these two products, XL, X logical on the left, X right logical, and Z logical on the left, Z logical on the right. And therefore, it's in a Bell state of the surface codes. And so that was put forward by Rausendorff as an idea for how one might build some repeater network, for example. He then went on to develop it in much more detail to think about fault-tolerant quantum computation. But the general idea applies to arbitrary codes. So why should we stick with surface codes? And this is really the new stuff that we started thinking about. So this is a very simple example of a more general construction, the foliated, in this case, steam code, where we've taken the steam code cluster state that I showed you before, and we've stacked three copies together. And then we've put controlled phase gates or cluster bonds in between the code qubits from primal to dual to primal lattices. And this has the same sorts of properties as before. So this foliated cluster now has parity check operators, which are like in the Rausendorff construction, products of x's at six sites, x, 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 x. Furthermore, if you measure the bulk and the ancilla on each end face in the x basis, you project out the end faces into logical eigenstates of logical or products of eigenstates of logical x on the left, logical x on the right, as well as logical z on the left, logical z on the right. That is, you end up with an entangled with entanglement between the logical qubits on the two end faces, encoded in whichever this code was, the steam code in this example. And errors, again, are detected, just as in the Rausendorff case, by these parity check operators, which I just said. So the same kinds of games that you can play with Rausendorff, you can play with this. That is, build this cluster state, measure out some subset of qubits in the X basis. From those single qubit measurements, detect properties of errors, syndromes of errors, and then do error correction. There we go. Here's the third example, which we're taking from our list of simple codes that people are familiar with. This is now the foliated Shor code. So here's the Shor code represented as a cluster state. Again, on the primal site at the start, the primal site at the end. This guy in the middle, it looks a bit different, but that's just the dual Shor code. So the dual Shor code just is obtained by taking the original Shor code, replacing X-like stabilizers with the Z stabilizers and vice versa. So this is the dual to the Shor code. And I've done the same thing. I've taken the Shor code cluster, connected it to its dual code representation, and then to the primal code and so on. And that satisfies the same sorts of properties. That is, I have parity check operators defined by the product of X's on these numbered sites, or alternatively, X's on these lettered sites. And they are able to detect logical errors, computational errors. And from there, one can do error correction. OK, so that so far is really just observations of how one can generalize this Rausendorff construction on this three-dimensional lattice to these much more simple-minded codes.
So from these three Fourier codes that you showed, is there one that has better properties than others?
Sorry, which one?
So you showed three particular foliated codes, mm-hmm. like the Steen, yep. surface, and Shore. Is there one of those three that does better than the others in terms?
Well, it depends what you mean by better. So these codes don't have thresholds by themselves. You need to then concatenate them, for instance. Whereas the surface code, you can simply make the code larger and you get a threshold, for instance. These are almost too trivial to do anything with. I really put them up here to illustrate the idea that it's generic to any CSS code, that you can take any CSS code you like, whether it's the surface code, Shore, or Steen code, and build this foliated construction. So where I'm going, actually, in the next few slides is really to think about what happens when you think about another class, another family of codes that might have properties that are desirable. And that's precisely this. So turbo codes is another family of codes that, it's a family of codes, meaning that there's the number of physical qubits is there's a whole series of codes getting larger and larger, which are well defined. And so just like the surface code, you can increase the lattice size and that gives you a whole family of codes. So the turbo codes they're non-local codes, but they're really just a concatenation of two convolutional codes, and they become non-local because there's a shuffle. But convolutional codes, it's relatively easy to represent. So here I've done two things in one. I've shown you the cluster state that gives you a particular convolutional code, and I've shown how it foliates in precisely the same way. So if you look at one of these sheets here, so this would correspond to the code qubits and the ancilla qubits in a given sheet that, as I was talking about before. So you know this would be the analog of the surface code. So if you forget about everything down here, this is just the cluster state, which when the ancilla are measured in the X basis, gives you a series of code qubits encoded in a convolutional code. And you can see why it's called a convolutional code. The stabilizers for this code correspond to some family of X operators acting on, or Z operators, sorry, acting on this site, this site, this site, this site, and these two, and then translates of that. So there's another stabilizer of the same form that acts on this site, this site, this site, this site, this site, and this site, and then translations thereafter. And because it's a CSS code, one can foliate that in precisely the same way, that is take the code qubits in a given sheet and then induce control phase gates between corresponding code qubits in one sheet and the next sheet, and then continue doing that. And when you do that, you can look at the construction and see what do the parity check operators look like. Well, again, it's parity check operators are formed from the code qubits in a given sheet and the ancilla qubits on adjacent sheets. So here's a parity check operator for this more complicated code on these numbered qubits here and the ancilla on the corresponding dual sheets adjacent to it. So just as a just to remind you, in the case of the surface code, the parity check operators are given by the product of some X operators on a given sheet and the two ancilla sheets adjacent to it. And that's the same construction that's going on here. So the turbo codes are generalizations of this construction. Essentially, you take a convolutional code such as this one here, you do a shuffle, and then you apply another convolutional code. So it's hard to draw them in a way that's that makes visual sense. But nevertheless, they're a family of codes, and they have some very nice properties. For instance, as opposed to the previous codes, the foliated turbo codes have finite rate. So the surface code in particular is a zero rate code. That is, as you make want to make the error correction properties better and better, that is, push the logical error rate down, you have to make the code larger and larger, but you still only get one or maybe two logical qubits out of the thing, no matter how many physical qubits you invest. And that's not true for these turbo codes. So for every physical qubit you purchase, you get some fraction of a logical qubit. And that's the rate of the code, and these turbo codes can be constructed with more or less arbitrary rate. So you can choose a rate, build a code that has that rate, and implement it in this form of a cluster state. So why might that be useful? Let me take a step sideways. So why might that be useful? It's if you think about a repeater network where before, as I described for the Rausendorf scheme, you might implement surface code cluster states at a bunch of nodes, connect them together by some long-range entanglement swapping, and then you've got some resource for teleportation. But why stick with surface codes which have zero rate, that is, that give you a single logical qubit between the end faces? Why not think about codes that have finite rate, like the turbo code? So that's fine. That's the reason that we really wanted to think about these, is that maybe there are applications where having finite rate is a useful resource to generalize. So in answer to your question, for example, code rate is something that you might want to choose, right? But then there's a problem. How do you do error correction? So detecting errors on some generalized foliated code happens in precisely the same way as in the Rausendorf construction. You measure single qubit X measurements on a subset of codes, including all subset of qubits, including all of those in the bulk, the intermediate layers, as well as the ancillas on the end faces. And you detect then error chains by the parity of the parity check operator. So in this case, there would be a parity check operator, which are the numbered ones. So that would detect some subset of errors. So error detection happens in precisely the same way, but error decoding is more complicated in this for general foliated codes. As a prelude to talking about error decoding, we're going to first suppose that we've chosen a CSS code, a quantum code, which is able to be decoded. Okay, it'd be unusual, it'd be difficult to imagine how to decode this foliated construction if you couldn't even decode one of the elements of the code, one copy of the code. So we're first going to assume this, that we've got some algorithm that's capable of decoding, say, a surface code or whatever code it is we're concerned with. Then the question is, can we take that code decoder and use it as a subroutine in some algorithm that is capable of decoding this foliated construction? Now, I'll say that at this point, that's not the way the surface code is typically decoded. So in this case of the surface code, there's for example, these Edmonds matching algorithms which take the error syndrome, does some sort of matching, perfect matching, and then returns an error correction chain, which if it is homologically equivalent to the original error process, successfully decodes the code. And when you think about the Rausendorf construction, you also use something like Edmonds. You also do perfect matching. But in Edmonds, what you find is error chains which terminate at different points in this three-dimensional lattice. You're doing Edmonds matching on this three-dimensional lattice. You're not restricting yourself to Edmonds matching within each layer of the Rausendorf construction. So even though, for example, in the surface code, you use the same classical processing to solve the decoding problem on either the surface code or its foliation, it's not the case that one's using Edmonds matching as a subroutine to solve the surface code on each layer of Rausendorf. Okay, so that's a subtlety just to illustrate that, in general, this problem isn't even described in the Rausendorf scenario. So in the Rausendorf scenario, there's this sort of accident, I suppose, where the same classical algorithm applies on the 3D lattice as on the 2D lattice. It's not that it's a subroutine, it's essentially the same algorithm. So we have this other problem. Imagine we've got some complicated code at each layer. How can we decode this foliation of those codes using that decoder as a subroutine? So the short answer is I don't really know. There is a heuristic decoder that we came up with, which is the following. So imagine we have got an algorithm that will decode a given code instance. And what does that correspond? And furthermore, we want it actually to be a soft decoder. So it's a decoder that gives us probabilities of errors on the constituent code qubits. So that is, we've got some algorithm which will return, given a syndrome on the code, and some model of errors that might have happened on the adjacent layer. So, sorry, a syndrome on a given code is an input, as well as a model of errors on the ancilla on the adjacent codes. It will spit out an error probability of on each of these code qubits. So that's what we're going to propose, that we assume we have that thing. Then the heuristic algorithm follows as such. We assume some probability distribution of errors, some prior for errors on these dual layers. We apply the error soft decoder to the primal layer, and we get some error model for the errors on these code qubits. So that's step one. Then we fix the code qubit error model, and we ask. We do the inverse problem, which is to calculate a maximum likelihood error probability on the ancilla qubits. And then we iterate those two steps. So we first assume that we have this syndrome, which might be subject to errors on these sites, decode that code, then we fix these errors, and then we calculate the probability of errors on these ancilla. And so we iterate backwards and forwards until we converge to some consistent, self-consistent error model that places errors with some probability on this on each layer and on the ancilla adjacent to it. So it's just a heuristic decoder, it's a belief propagation decoder, and we have no reason to believe that it would work a priori. It might work, it might not work. And so for these turbo codes, we just decided to give it a try and see does it in fact work. So, I mean, this is a representation of what's going on. There's some decoder for the convolutional codes, there's interleavers, there's decoders for the outer convolutional codes, and this sits inside some loop that iterates between layers and primal layers and dual layers. I won't go into the details here. And this is the end result. So this is the same. This is a plot here of an error model in which we've got errors. Z errors distributed across some turbo code, some specific family of turbo codes with certain rates going from 1.4% up to 3% on this axis. And then we calculate for a given instance of that code by Monte Carlo simulation what the probability of that code failing is. And so let me look at this column here. So this is the bit error rate. This is the probability that a given logical qubit in the error code fails. And you can, well, the colours are a bit hard to see here, but these three rows correspond to different depths of the code. So this would correspond to a sort of almost trivial instance with a single layer, that is just a code and its dual, this would be the one layer instance. The three layer instance would be to have two more sheets sitting down here. Five layer would be two more again below that. So the different depth codes that we're thinking about from this row to this row to this row. And you can see for a given depth code, we think about a family of codes that has different numbers of logical qubits ranging from 10 to 160. So the colours I apologise for. 10 on this plot is this shallow curve here. 160 logical qubits is this steep curve here. And you can see that as you go from codes with small numbers of logical qubits to codes with large numbers of logical qubits, there's an improvement in the performance. And in fact, you can see that there's this sort of threshold-like behavior that manifests in here at a few percent. That is to say, if the error rate is below this number, then as we make the code larger, we get an improvement in the performance. And that's exactly the sort of threshold behavior you get in the surface code and so on. The difference between these two columns, this is the word error rate. That's the probability that is counted as a word failure if any one of the logical qubits fails. That is, if any of these 10 qubits that are encoded, it's a bit hard to see that pointer now. If any of these 10 qubits, logical qubits encoded, fail, then a failure rate on this axis would correspond to one of those breaking. In this case, 160 qubits, any one of those failing, logical qubits, any one of those failing constitutes a logical error. So, I mean, I think this is a very nice result, because as opposed to the surface code where you still have a single logical qubit no matter what size code, in this case, as we're making the code larger, that is, increasing the number of both logical and physical qubits, the performance of the code is increasing. And you can see that there's this threshold-like behavior. So word error rate counts an error. When one of these fails, bit error rate is just sort of divided by this number in a sense. And so you can see that there's this sort of threshold-like behavior. For the turbo code, this is not a true threshold. It's believed that, or known that there's a pseudo threshold. That is, once we make the code sufficiently large, this crossing point eventually goes to zero. But it does so in a relatively gentle way. And so it may be that for many practical purposes, the performance improves with the length of the code up to some large size. Means that there's probably many practical problems that one can solve with these things. Nevertheless, the point of this slide really is just to show you that this construction, this foliated construction applied to the turbo code with a finite, which is a finite rate code, has some very nice properties that are reminiscent of the surface code. And furthermore, we've got a decoder which, though heuristic, seems to work quite well for this case here. And so I'll finish up there. So what can we conclude? Well, so I guess this first point is really just an observation that people have made in various contexts. That is, that the CSS codes can be derived from cluster states. Furthermore, that we can generalize Rausendorf's construction of taking clusterized codes and stacking them together. And the important things that I'd highlight really are that there are these heuristic decoders. We've cooked up a heuristic decoder which takes decoders for the original codes, stacks them together, and we do get some promising numerical results from those. And so I guess there's some areas for future work. So for example, what happens with Rausendorf, you can think of fault-tolerant quantum computation in that context as being code deformation of logical qubits that are encoded in defects within the Rausendorf lattice. And code deformation in that case corresponds to this geometric picture of grading these sort of donuts through space. If you've seen his paper, you see these great pictures of bike tires and sort of, you know, donuts that are all interleaved with each other. And so that's really just implementation of this idea of code deformation, which has, in that case, a very nice geometric picture. For an arbitrary code, code deformation is going to be some algebraic construction, which may not have an obvious geometric interpretation. But nevertheless, with this clusterized and foliated construction, it's probable that we can think about how that works. And there's these quasi-transversal codes that people have proposed relatively recently, which might be nice to think about in this case here. So I'll finish up there, and thanks very much for coming along.
Any questions?
Can you go to the previous slide? So I just want to make sure that I understood. So as you increase the number of layers, this crossing point, which I think you call the pseudo threshold,
goes to
zero, I guess?
Well, that's what we believe, yeah. I mean, for computational reasons, this is quite a slow algorithm to implement in practice, and so we didn't go very much beyond this. So this point does drop. This threshold does get smaller, and we don't know, in fact, that it goes to zero, but we believe it does because turbo codes have that property. But yeah, I guess as I said before, you can imagine that, you know, for some practical applications where maybe this distance in a repeater network, maybe this distance is 50 kilometres, this lets you go to 250 kilometres in a way which up to five layers would take you to some range which becomes impractical with perhaps entanglement sharing, but you know, building these networks gives you some reasonably robust performance, and certainly below this number would give you some good threshold.
Have you thought of other classes of codes that?
So Andrew Bolt, my student, implemented these bicycle codes, which I actually don't know very much about, but he did that because he had some reason to believe that they would perform poorly under this heuristic decoding, and indeed they did. I can talk about that more with you later on, but yeah.
Any other questions? Great, well, let's thank Tom.